Marriage Radio with Joe Beam. This is the Joe Beam Show, and we're very glad to have you with us. As we get started, let me mention a couple of things, if I may. Next Tuesday evening, when we do our program, we'll actually have been on the air for 1 year with this particular program. And as a special celebration of that, if you will, I'm going to bring my wife, Alice, on with me. If you're not familiar with our story, let me bring you up to date on it just a little, if I may. Alice and I were married to each other for 15 years. Then we divorced. We were divorced for 3 years. Neither one of us was married to either one in those 3 years, anyone else, yeah, I must say. And at the end of those 3 years, then Alice and I remarried each other. We've been married now, coming up on 29 years it is that we're back together. And many people ask questions about that. They want to know, okay, what happened? How did your marriage fall apart? They want to know, what did Alice do in the 3 years after you divorced her and left and you went off and lived that wild and terrible lifestyle that you did? They want to know why it would be that I would actually come to Alice and ask her, would you please take me back? And they want to know why Alice would say, okay, I will. And by the way, she didn't say that easily. It took her a while to do it. And then they want to know why. Okay, once you get back together, how in the world could you ever trust Joe again? And how could you build a relationship? And how has it lasted 29 years this time? And so there are all kinds of questions that people love to ask Alice. And so next week, Lord willing, that's what we plan to do as we do Marriage Radio with Joe Beam, or so, as we often call it, the Joe Beam Show. It'll be a week from tonight, beginning at 9 p.m. Central Time. Alice Beam will be our very special guest for our one-year anniversary on this program. And you get to call in and ask her anything you wish, talk to her about anything you wish, and I think it'll be a very good program. Now, tonight we're going to be talking about how to reconcile a marriage after major trouble. And we have a couple that we're about to bring on the air with us. Very good people. I know them. I think very highly of them. They have volunteered to come on a program. Actually, they've been on a program before. And in this program, we're going to be talking about how they reconcile. We'll ask them a few questions at the outset about, you know, what happened, what went wrong. We'll ask about how did they finally get back together. And when they did, what kind of things did they have to go through to actually work out the reconciliation? And after we talk to them for a little while, we'll actually open up the phones to anybody that would like to call and talk to us tonight. And if you do, of course, we would love to talk to you. You can ask questions of me, or you can ask questions of either one of our two people in this couple, the husband or the wife. Or we can all just talk about it together. And in addition to asking questions, sometimes you can just make comments, I guess I should say. Nothing like doing live online radio. And so, as we start off tonight, we have Lily and Eric. Lily, Eric, can you both hear me?
Yes.
Good. Excellent. Welcome to the program tonight. I'll tell you what, if you don't mind, let's start with this. Give some background, and you guys decide who does the talking first. Give some background about what happened, and before we get to the reconciliation, what happened that caused you guys to have the marriage problems?
Gosh, I could take up a whole show with that, Joe. In a nutshell, I mean, we had a lot of communication issues, a lot of time that I spent away from the home for work, and a lot of time that I spent developing relationships outside the home and not giving attention to my relationships inside the home, which caused Lily, of course, to pull away from me. And, you know, before we even realized we were in trouble, we were already way far gone, man.
And when you realized you were in trouble, what was happening then?
I mean, by that time, I'd already, you know, developed a limerent object outside the home. I guess I should expound on that. I mean,
Let me do something here just for the sake of people who are not regular listeners and may have tuned in for the first time tonight. Let me explain what a limerent object is very quickly. Limerence is a word that we use in the social sciences to refer to being, quote, madly in love, end quote, with someone else. And so Eric's very familiar with our terminology. And when we talk about a limerent object, it means basically an affair partner. It may not actually be a physical affair, but at least an emotional affair, a person that you become very strongly connected to emotionally. And so when he speaks of a limerent object, he's talking about an affair partner in essence. Is that right, Eric?
Yes.
Okay. And so you got involved with her. Did you actually leave? Did you divorce? Did your marriage end?
No, we, I had an affair and, it didn't go very long before I admitted the affair to Lily, and, we were living in New Mexico at the time, and we moved back to Tennessee, to try to work on things. And I was still in limerence. I was still maintaining contact with the other woman, and I, after about 2 months of being back, left and went back to New Mexico to pursue that relationship.
Okay, so when you say you told Lily about it, is it because you were caught or you felt guilty? Why did you tell her about it before you moved back to Tennessee?
I felt guilty about it.
Okay.
I knew enough to know that the proximity, you know, the location and everything that, you know, I mean, we didn't live in a very big town at all, that it was only a matter of time before everybody found out anyway. And,
okay.
You know, and I did feel badly about it. But it was,
okay, so,
it was a case of that guilt didn't matter at the time. You know what I mean?
Right. Okay. So you guys moved back to Tennessee, and that was an effort basically to try to save your marriage, at least the initial effort to try to save your marriage. Is that right?
That's correct.
Okay. Now you are back here just a few months, and then you actually went back to be with the other woman. Now, look,
yeah.
Lindley, let's take you up right there. When he left you that time, okay, you knew about it, you'd come home, you're trying to figure it out over here on this side of the country, and now he decides to go back to the other woman. What kind of things were going through your mind when that happened?
Well, when he first left, he had only just told me that he had actually felt like he was in love with this girl. And so the whole time I thought this was just a physical affair and nothing more than that. And then he told me right before he left that it was more than that in his head. And so, of course, I was dealing with that kind of crushing blow, if you will. But whenever he left, he still was trying to convince me that this move was actually just to help him clear his head, that he wasn't going back to be with this person. And he kind of strung me along that way for a couple of months where I actually thought he was going to get established there and we would just move back out there, or he would get transferred somewhere else or something, because he also got a different job out there, and he was trying to use the fact that there weren't a lot of job opportunities that were working out for him here in Tennessee as a reason. So kind of in the back of my mind, I felt like, oh, well, he's really just going back for that. But I kept kind of being naive about it and telling myself that the reason that he was doing this was, you know, he was trying to get his head straight. He wasn't going to do this. You know, at first we were actually talking on a daily basis, and he was still acting as though, you know, it was not what it really looked like.
Okay. All right. Now, since this program is about reconciliation, I'm going to kind of jump us forward a little bit. How long was it before you finally decided to truly try to reconcile the relationship?
He was in New Mexico for 6 months. And during that time, he ended up breaking off the first relationship and starting a second relationship and not telling me until he came back.
Right.
And so I thought that 6 month mark was the end of it. But then it turned out that he stayed in communication with the second person for another 3 months behind my back. And then when I found out about it, I kicked him out completely and thought that was the end of it until Joe Beam. So it wasn't the end of it, because we ended up coming to the workshop, and that was when our actual reconciliation starts. I don't even consider the date that he moved back, I don't even consider that him being in reconciliation with me. I called that our convenience reconciliation.
Gotcha.
So it was a year in November.
Okay. Now, what I'd like to do now, and so you guys finally decided, you came, and for people who are not familiar that are listening, when you refer to the workshop, Little is referring to the fact that we at Marriage Helper do an intensive 3-day workshop for marriages in trouble. We call it 911, the Marriage Helper 911 workshop. And so they came to that intense 3-day workshop. Okay. Now, you finally put it back together, and of course, you've got an intriguing story. We could talk for 2 hours just about what happened so far. But I really want to move you into something that you've learned a lot about so people can hear your story about this and we can start taking questions as we go along. So what did you learn about reconciliation once you started into the true reconciliation process? For the sake of all those people listening out there, what are some things you learned that if people are in the process of trying to reconcile or if they're just thinking, hopefully someday I can reconcile, what are some things they need to know that you learned?
Well, the most important thing that I feel like people need to understand is that I think that I had this expectation in my head, like this kind of romance movie, you know, would run through my head and, like, you know, he would just show up on the porch one night and, you know, suitcases in his arms, and I'd just be like this, you know, I'd run to him and, you know, like the whole, you know, violin playing in the background kind of image. And I think that it felt like I was expecting this. Everything was just going to be better when he came home. Like everything would be behind us. Our life would move forward from there. But the truth of it is, I just didn't realize that it took a lot of work. Like, reconciliation, it's worth it. It is totally worth it. But it's a lot more difficult than I thought it was going to be. Like, I guess I just thought things would just fall back into place.
and it would
but
be
it
wonderful.
But it takes a lot
of
effort.
So what kind of thing? What, working at what, Lily? What kind of things did it take?
Sorry, Eric tapped me, so I think he wants to say it.
Okay, Eric, that's fine. Go ahead.
I think the most important thing for me was in saying what Lily was saying about it being difficult and, you know, having times even in reconciliation that, you know, that you're just wanting to throw your hands up and saying, you know, why are we even trying to do this? The biggest thing for me, and it's something that Lily and I talked extensively about during and after the workshop, but I mean, the biggest thing to me was acknowledging what's going on, acknowledging and fully being able to listen to, look, there's no excuse for an affair. I mean, there's just none. But there are reasons why someone would second guess their marriage or find an emotional object outside. And if you don't fix those things, then what are you reconciled for? You've got to acknowledge where both parties have exhibited weaknesses in the marriage. You've got to be able to acknowledge that on both sides and figure out what are we going to do to fix that? Because it's all about root causes.
I definitely agree with that. There are things going on. Now, Lily, just because there might be people listening out there going, well, wait a minute, we just heard Eric say he's the one that had the affair, and now he's saying that on both sides some things need to be fixed. So how do you react to that, Lily? Let people understand how you feel.
Well, of course I'm a perfect angel and I have done nothing wrong in our marriage. well, I'm just kidding. I really
he is
am.
A perfect angel.
I think that our biggest thing was communication. Well, I'd say, okay, 50% communication and 50% the fact that I'm really controlling out of fear. I'm very insecure. And so I had a tendency to make those sideways comments like, oh, you know, is that your girlfriend at work or something like that. So there were a lot of things that I would do that I know were hurting Eric. And I never, until we went to the workshop and we really started examining these things, I never really realized how much I was actually hurting him. And so that was a huge revelation. It was a huge thing that we took away from this was, like, instead of just seeing each other as, you know, Eric or Lily, it was like, now wait a minute, this is a person that I love with all of my heart, but I guess I never really saw him for his humanity. I kind of saw him as like, this is my husband, and kind of like almost like an object. I know that sounds horrible, but mm-hmm. I felt like he didn't, you know, like if I hurt him, I didn't feel like I was hurting him. Like I was like, right. Well, I'm just speaking the truth, or I'm just telling you how I feel.
But I know that I hurt him a lot. Right, and I'm going to make sure everybody hears this, that even though he was mm-hmm. the one that had the affair, what you're saying is, and you made it very clear, both of you, that you're not justifying the affair, but you're saying that you can see that you had some contributing factors into what was going on in your marriage. You're certainly not responsible for the fact that he went and was involved with somebody else. But what I hear you saying, and I want to make sure that we're saying it correctly, where everybody out there can know what you guys are saying, you're saying that you accepted some responsibility in the deterioration of your marriage that ultimately led to Eric being involved with somebody else, though it wasn't your fault he was directly involved with somebody else. Is that right?
Right.
Okay.
We both had to come to an understanding of what we had done to hurt one another and acknowledge those things and truly apologize for those things, like repentant heart, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And so that was basically the foundation of our true reconciliation.
And you started putting together, you didn't renew the old relationship. You actually built a new relationship, right?
Absolutely. Everything from November 7th of 2014 on is brand new marriage.
Okay. And some of that was awkward, I think I've heard you say. Is that right?
Yes. I think, like I said, I think whenever you think of reconciliation, you don't realize how uncomfortable it actually kind of is. Because it's like, I described it as kind of like a person with amnesia. Like, you recognize this person, you know everything about them, but somehow it just feels weird interacting with them. It's pretty awkward at first because you don't know how to act because you both know that there's this big elephant in the room between you. And just mm-hmm. kind of trying to find your way back to each other and try and establish that intimacy that you kind of lose in that separation.
Right.
Is,
okay. Well, there's tons of people out here wanting to ask you guys questions. Is it okay if we start going to some of the callers and get more specific about what they want to know about this? Would that be okay with you?
Yeah. Yeah.
All right. All right. We're going to go to area code 406. Hello, area code 406. You're on the Joe Beam Show. Hello. Are you there? 406. Area code 406. Can you hear me, please? Okay. Okay. That person just hung up. I think I scared them, Lily. they were with us, and when I said that, they took off. All right, let's go to area code 202. Hello, area code 202. You're on the Joe Beam Show.
Hi, Joe. This is Ruth. How are you?
I'm fine. You have any questions for Lily or Eric?
Well, I guess for everybody, including you, just kind of a general question. I'm currently in the midst of, I guess, divorce. My husband filed, and I just secured a new lawyer today, somebody I think who will be more of an advocate for me. And I mentioned to her about the workshop.
Mm-hmm.
My husband is getting ready at the end of this week. He's moving out of state with the other woman. He took a new job. And we really have no communication. Our kids are grown out of the house.
Mm-hmm.
And I was just wondering how to go about putting that stipulation into a proposed settlement and how forcefully should I fight for it in terms of if it gets to negotiation that I have to give up something else that I want to secure the workshop. I guess what is the best plan to get?
Okay, I'll answer that one then, and let me just answer that one very quickly. First of all, don't offer to give up anything that you don't want to lose. What I'm saying is this: if you offer, like if you come to the workshop with me, then I will give you this in the divorce, whatever this might be. Make sure it's something that you actually and honestly are willing to give up, because if it comes to the workshop, you're going to have to give up whatever it is you said it was going to be. Now, some people do it with, like, I will agree to this financial situation, or some people say, I'll go ahead and not drag the divorce out. I'll actually make it go faster. It's whatever the other person wants. It's what you know is something that he really desires to have. And then you say, okay, that's fine. I can do that. I will give you that. Now, understand that if you make some kind of a trade to get somebody to go for help for the marriage, understand that you're not just asking him to go to a workshop like ours with you, but you're actually saying that you will not only be there, but you will participate, that both of those things are required if I'm going to give up this thing that I'm going to give up. And then understand that while, for example, in our workshop, our success rate is 3 out of 4, there's still a 1 out of 4 chance that, indeed, it might not work. In other words, it still might not save the marriage. So that's why we say be very careful about what you're going to give up. Think it through very, very carefully. And if you are willing to do it, that's fine. And people do it all the time. We have people come to the workshop like that all the time. But you've got to find whatever it is that's important to him, and you've got to be willing to give it up. And understand that it gives you a 3 out of 4 shot to save your marriage, but it's not 100% guaranteed.
Right. Well, I mean, even if there's no guarantee, it's moving in that direction anyway. So what have I got to lose?
Well, that's what we think. Well, whatever you would lose is what you offer to trade. So that's
right,
why you've got
right.
to think that through very carefully.
Right,
okay,
right.
We're talking about reconciliation tonight, and there are a lot of people waiting to ask Lily and Eric questions about that. I hope that helps you, and I hope your new attorney really does well for you, Ruth. I really do.
Thank you.
Okay?
Thank you.
Okay, you're very welcome. All right, now we're going to code area code 937. Hello, 937. You're on the Joe Beam Show.
Hello.
How are you tonight?
I'm good. How are you?
I am doing well. Can you give me a first name we can call you, please?
Jamie.
Okay.
I had a question for Eric and
good.
Lily. Eric, I had a question for you. Do you really think that your feelings for the other woman were sincere? And what made you realize that you finally missed your family and wanted to come back home to Lily?
The first part of that question, were they sincere? Absolutely. Were they permanent? No. And what I mean by that is, there was a point, and I remember this point, I won't go into it, but there was a point in my life where I said, you know, there is not one thing, not one person, it doesn't matter how I feel about them right now, there's nobody that equates to my wife. I mean, the memories that we have, the children that we've reared together, the life experience that me and my wife have, nothing tops that. Nothing.
So
and,
did you still feel that way during your limerence? Like, did you have times where, even though you were with the other woman, that you still thought of Lily and the kids and kind of second-guessed your decision and what you were doing?
Absolutely. Absolutely. Quite often. But there's, you know... love and limerence and affection and emotion are, they're fluid and man, they can be dirty, rotten scoundrels sometimes. You know, and it's you know, it's kind of like the old saying, you know, that a woman's allowed to change her mind at least twice. You know, it's like that. I mean, it changed from minute to minute. And to be honest, sometimes it was even, you know, yeah, I love my wife, I miss my wife, but the damage is done. I know how Lily is. She's never going to forgive me. I'm never going to move past this. So I might as well continue in the direction that I'm going.
Well, did you guys, how often did you guys communicate? Me and my husband, he's not communicating with me at all. And I'm trying to, you know, kind of keep my distance and not whine, blow up his phone and all that. And I'm not reaching out to him. I don't know if that's a good thing or a bad thing. He lives with her and he lives out of state. And me and the kids are here.
If I may speak in here just for a little bit, the kind of thing that, that Eric's describing, when I went through limerence, and of course, it's some time back when I did that, when I went through limerence, I actually divorced Alice to be with the other woman.
Mm-hmm.
And at the outset, I did have some of the kind of feelings that Eric's describing, but I got so heavily into it that I didn't think about Alice at all. As a matter of fact, I had so vilified her. I made her into a villain. I mm-hmm. so saw her as being the bad guy that I didn't have any contact with her except for the fact that we had children and we had to interact because of them. And when I did interact with Alice in those days, I was quite angry and mean when I did it. So I'm glad that Eric didn't go as far as I did. And I hate the fact that your husband has. I think it is wise that you're not willing to get his
phone. Well, the weird thing about that is you talked with Alice about anything pertaining to the kids. My issue is he only speaks to my middle son, the one that's missing him the most. And he goes through him and tries to, you know, say, hey, you know, maybe you can come see me this weekend. But he doesn't bring it to me, so it kind of puts me in the middle. And I don't know if he doesn't want to speak to me because he doesn't want to, if he feels guilty or, you know, I don't understand. We have kids together, and I don't know if it's her, right. You know, pushing the don't talk to her, you know, whatever.
Who knows? It could be that he feels guilty. It could be that she's controlling. I know one thing, if I were in your shoes, and of course you must make your own decision. I cannot and will not tell you what to do, and I don't think Lily or Eric will either. But mm-hmm. if I were in your shoes, I don't think I would let him communicate like that. I'd say to them, if you want to talk about the kids, you're going to have to come through me. And I'm not saying you can't talk directly to the kids.
Yeah, I did tell him, I did text him that about a week ago. And he actually tried to call my 14-year-old son. I've talked to you about my 14-year-old son. You said he was atypical because he doesn't really reach out to him as much because he tells him, you know, we're not doing good. This is not a good thing. And he kind of gets frustrated with him. So he doesn't contact him as much. But he'll contact my middle son. Because it's easier.
Yeah. So are you going to allow him to continue to try to take advantage of that?
No. My I know it sounds awful, but my 12-year-old doesn't have his phone anymore. He thinks he lost it because I'm like, you're not going to manipulate the 12-year-old.
Well, I'm glad you're not letting him do that. And, of course, if you have to, you know, that's what attorneys are for. They can do legal things here that can protect those children from that kind of manipulation. I'm so sorry that this is happening to you. And I'm glad that Eric gave the answer that he did. Understand that every person that goes to Limerick does it a little bit differently. And I went through it in a different way than Eric did, more intensely, I guess you should say, based on what he's described so far. But it sounds like your husband's even gone beyond that in the sense that he's avoiding the one son who confronts him and trying to manipulate the other. That's just pretty sad. And my heart breaks for you and for your children.
So do you think I should continue the no contact? Like this evening, for example, he tried to finally call me. He hasn't tried to call me since like New Year's Eve when she found out that he lied to her about being married. And obviously he went back. But, I mean, I haven't heard. He hasn't tried to call me since. He tried to call me tonight after trying to reach my 14-year-old, and he's not ready to talk to him, so he didn't pick up the phone. And I didn't pick up the phone. Is that a bad thing? I mean,
well, I can't tell you if it's a bad thing or not. I think it's if he contacts you, it makes sense that you would communicate with him, that you would talk to him.
Right.
Because you're not pursuing him. You're not blowing up his phone. He's calling you.
Right.
He's contacting you. And if he talks about the children, and you are a very rational person, and you can have these conversations like, no, I've got to protect my child. I feel like it's not safe for him emotionally to be done like this. So if it were I would answer the phone and I would talk to him. But that again, is your decision.
Yeah, I think it's just at this point we're not having communication. It's just a fear of, you know, oh, gosh, what now? You know, because I think he's probably thinking I'm feeding my 14-year-old on stuff to say. But my thing is I don't want him taking the kids out of state to her house.
Right.
That's where he's staying. But I'm not real comfortable as far as wanting to take the steps to file anything because I want to reconcile. You know what I mean? So I don't know what to do with that.
Well, reconciliation does not necessarily end if you have to file. You have to do what you've got to do to protect yourself and protect your children. And does that mean that he'll be happy about it? The answer is no, he won't be happy about it. But it doesn't necessarily cut off all
things.
Well,
I think he probably would at this point. He's so far into that limerence thing. I think that's probably what he's wanting me to do, so he doesn't have to do it.
It could be, but limerence is not going to last forever. And so you do what you think is best. But I think that my suggestion is you protect yourself and your children. And if you don't want them going out of state to her house, then it's certainly all right, I think, to get the attorney to represent you to make sure that's not going to happen. And it doesn't mean
well,
you have to file
for complaints. Well, I did contact one, and it said we're a no-fault state. So mm-hmm. they said in the consultation that as of right now, I mean, he has just as much right to take them as I do.
Yep, but they're living with you. I'd find a tough attorney. Find one that's a gladiator. And every state has different laws, and the attorneys have certain things they could do. But I pray that it goes well for you. May God be with you, okay?
Thank you.
Okay, very well. Let's see if we can get some more questions here directly for Lily and Eric. We're going to area code 573. Hello, area code 573. You're on the Joe Beam Show.
Hello, Joe. This is Jay.
Hi, Jay.
I'm in a very similar situation to what they are. My wife is in Limerick. She's falling hard for this guy. I believe it's all emotional. We've fought back and forth for 6 months, and I guess I've hounded her and harassed her about leaving him, how he's no good, so on and so forth. She finally, I guess, got tired this last week and left, kind of without any notice, left me and my daughter. She did write my daughter a letter, and she has been in slight contact with her, but I'm just wondering how I can convince her to go to the workshop, how I can convince her to end the limerence, what I can do to quit harassing her about it. I know you've already answered, and Eric and Lily already answered some of the questions. But
I'd like to hear Lily's perception on what you just said. Lily, how would you respond to that?
To how to react now that she's gone and you don't want to keep pushing her away further?
Yeah, I admit that every time I hound her about how she doesn't need to be with this guy, it's just pushing her further and further away.
Yeah, that's exactly when it does. Well, one of the things that I kind of had to learn while I was waiting on Eric to come back was that the more that I did the accusations and the anger and the frustration and all those things that I wanted to take out on him, like, are you an idiot? Those things were just serving to make him more angry. I mean, that's your first reaction. It's natural. I had to get to a place where I was just going to let Eric be Eric, and I was going to take care of myself and take care of my children. Because at this moment, that's all there is, and that's all that matters, is you and your daughter. And your wife has to come to her senses on her own. And pushing in that way, the begging and pleading, all that does is make them feel more powerful. I mean, if you go back, the show that Joe did with Eric is in their archive somewhere. But Eric explained what that did to him as far as kind of gave him like a power trip. It made him feel, you know, like he was really sticking it to me when I was begging and pleading. And I know that makes him sound cruel, but that's just a mindset. When someone's in limerence, they don't think about your feelings. And so, I mean, in my opinion, I think right now you just need to kind of pull back and try and focus, especially on your daughter. I don't know how old she is, but this is going to be really difficult for her emotionally.
Yeah,
and she said, just focus on yourself and helping her to understand what's going on rationally. I think that's the best thing that you can do.
Well, she's 17. She's very mature. She knows exactly what's going on. She's even told her mother she's doing wrong. And that didn't do any good either. And this question kind of might be for Joe, but should I have any contact? I mean, right now she's not wanting any contact with me. Should I at least reach out a little bit just to say, hi, how are you, I love you, anything?
Okay, let me ask you a question, if I may. Is the daughter living with her or with you?
With me. She left the home this past week, and she'll continue to live with me. She moved in with her mother for a while, said she's looking for an apartment. I just told her she's not moving in with the guy that she's in limerence with.
Okay, so you say she's looking for an apartment, but she's already moved out. So do you know where she is?
Yeah, she went to her mother's for the time being.
Okay, so she's away from the daughter. She's away from you. here's the way this kind of works. It's like this. We're not saying that you cease to become a human being. For example, if you heard she was sick, it would make all the sense in the world to call and say, hey, heard you were sick, just checking on you're okay. What we talk about is this, that if the other person feels that you are pursuing, like if anything comes across in any shape, fashion, or form as begging or pleading or whining, those kinds of things, it actually propels them further, typically in the other direction. It did me. We'll ask Eric in a moment if it did him, but it definitely did me when I was off on that Limerick's thing. And so the fact that if you just pick up the phone and call her out of the blue and say, hey, just want to check on you and see if you're all right, may work against you in the sense that she'll think, okay, are you trying to check, you know, what are you really doing? Are you trying to find out where I'm going? Are you watching me? Are you spying on me? Those kinds of things. If there's some reason to call, then it makes all the sense in the world. If there's not a reason to call, we suggest that you don't, just so, in a sense, like Lily was saying, so they're not in the power position, but also where they don't think, okay, you're not going to leave me alone. You're not going to let me do what I'm going to do. They're going to see it as something that they rebel against. Eric, did you feel that way?
Well, of course I did. Yeah. I mean, it was, you know, every conversation like that, I won't say every, but 90% of the conversations that just started off with this, you know, hey, how are you? Turned into something a lot more, and I didn't like it. I mean, it would start with, hey, how are you? Oh, I'm doing good. I'm fine. How are you? And then it was, you know, well, you know, I was like, well, I'm going to go. So why? You got to go to, you know, you got to go somewhere. You going to meet somebody? You know, and here we go. And now it's time for World War III.
That's exactly what I'm doing.
Yeah.
Well, another thing that I want to point out is the limited contact. A huge reason that the limited contact worked well for me, even though it did give me my desired sense of freedom for a time. The thing is, even in doing all this, I've got a moral compass. I know what's right and what's wrong. Regardless, I mean, you can justify anything. You can justify murder or robbery or anything, but you can't betray your moral compass. And when I know something is wrong, when I have to face my son or my daughter who knows something's up and they want to talk to me about it and I can't because I'm ashamed, then I need to be away from them because I know what I'm doing is wrong. And the more and more and more I felt like the walls were closing in with Lily trying to force contact with her and with the kids and stuff like that, you know, I was literally like, you know, damn it, let me do wrong in peace. It was a sense of shame. I don't need to be made to feel ashamed because I already know I'm doing wrong. Does that make sense at all?
That's exactly what's going on here. I feel like her guilty conscience is taking over, and she still contacts her by text and phone calls, not near as much as she even used to when she lived here. But I feel like her guilty conscience and her, like you said, moral compass, because she's always been, this has just hit me out of the blue. We've been together since we were 15. We're 40 now. It's just hard.
It's tough. It's a heartbreaking kind of thing because you basically have grown up together. I know that you love her very much. And I know it's so tough. It is so difficult not to contact her, to check on her, those kinds of things. And we're not trying to be cruel or harsh. We're just saying, it, based on what I see in the couples that I work with, and it looks like both Lily and Eric are agreeing with me, is that if you cut out the contact other than for when you really need to talk to her. Now, if she calls you, fine. I mean, that's great. But not calling her actually seems to work to your advantage. And I know it's hard because you love her. I know it's hard because you miss her, but that's what I would recommend. That's what I would suggest.
Okay. Is there any tips, just this one last question, is there any tips in talking her into going to the workshop? Because begging, pleading didn't work.
Yeah,
I would love for her to go.
Yeah. Begging and pleading typically doesn't work. The most common thing that happens to get people to come to the workshop is that the other spouse offers some kind of a deal, like you would offer a deal. If there's something she wants, like sometimes people actually say, okay, I'll go ahead and sign the divorce papers if you'll go. That's the extreme, but we see that. Or I won't fight you on this particular issue if you go. Or I'll back off on this. It's something that you know that she wants, that you're willing to give up if she comes. The second thing after that, if you can't think of anything like that, the second thing after that is if someone that she does love and care about, such as your 17-year-old daughter, rather than chastising or pushing or trying to coerce her, just say, look, if your daughter did something like this, Mom, just for me, would you do this one thing? It's only 3 days, and it can help both you and Dad understand what the future could be. And you might discover that, no, there's no way you want to work it out, but I'm asking for me, would you go? And so if a person like that, like your daughter does that, not pushing, but just saying, would you do it for me? Sometimes that will work. Sometimes if there are other people that can bring about consequences, for example, if your wife's parents were very much involved in this, I wish my daughter wasn't doing this, then sometimes they can actually be involved. And we even have a video that we have online on our website on Marriage Helper. That's Marriage Help, marriagehelper.com, where that it's a short video I've made for people like your spouse, saying, okay, your spouse has been asking you to come, and you probably have all the reasons you don't want to. Let me make some promises to you. And in that video, I tell them how we're not going to twist their arms. We're not going to try to make them stay married. We're going to treat them with respect and dignity. We're not going to preach at them. That we're going to do everything we can to educate everybody, but that they will be treated with dignity and respect, and they don't have to come in being terrified that they're going to be manipulated, all those kinds of things. So those are some of the things that work. So if you follow those, there were three. One is where you say, here's something I'll trade. The second is people that she loves or cares about say, will you do it for us? It's only 3 days. Will you please do it? The final one that I mentioned tonight, and there are others, but that, okay, here's a video that tells what it's going to be about so that you don't have to worry what's going to happen there.
Yeah, a 17-year-old daughter, she would be the only one who could get to her because her mom, this is mean to say, but her mom's actually enjoying this because she's moved back in with her. She's a single woman. All of her other kids are gone, so she's actually enjoying this, so I think she's promoting it.
Wow. Well, I'm sorry. All kinds of things happen with the kids when these things go on. I hope and pray that somehow this all works out for you. I really do. But right now, even in your pain, I suggest that if you can, that you back off. Now, are you familiar by any chance with our 10-week online program that's just for the one spouse?
Yeah, I've actually started it. I'm just in week one. I'm just
okay.
Starting the workbook.
Good.
And stuff.
Well, Thursday night, of course, we're going to do we'll have our online coaching call with that, and you can interact with me there through that webinar. But over the 10 weeks of that, you're going to learn a whole lot more than I can actually talk about right here. And I'm glad you already signed up
right.
For that. I'm glad. We'll work through that together, and we'll help you learn a lot more stuff there. How about that?
Yeah, that'll work.
Okay, Jay, you take care of yourself, my friend.
All right, thank you.
Okay, you're welcome. Okay, now we're moving to area code 778. Area code 778, you're on the Joe Beam Show.
Hi, Joe. This is Tracy.
Hi, Tracy. I'm on with Eric and with Lily tonight. Have you listened to them any during the program?
I missed the very beginning of it, but I did hear I did hear part of it. And I do have some questions for them and for you.
Good. Okay.
So I found out in September that my husband was having an emotional affair, and it was by reading the emails with this coworker that I also found out. We've been married for 14 years. We have 8-year-old twin boys. I also found out that my husband has been addicted to pornography for our whole marriage, which I was unaware of. When I read these emails, I contacted him and I told him right away that ends or we are done. And he ended it immediately. He sent her an email. I also followed up with an email telling her that if she ever contacted my husband again, I would be contacting her husband. So there has been no contact since September. And we are trying, to reconcile. And Lily, it was really interesting what you said when you said that you were insecure because, you know, never knew any of this until going into therapy. But it turns out I also am insecure, which I think almost anyone that met me would be very surprised by. And it turns out my husband, and Joe, this is something that you would be familiar with attachment theory, is dismissive avoidance. So here we are trying to reconcile, and it's me, you know, wanting to talk about what happened, and he can't stand it. And, you know, the more I talk, the more irritated he gets. And I also think he is still in limerence, although we don't discuss that because I don't think I could handle even discussing that. But I think that's part of the reason for his irritation when I try to express my needs, because I think he still cannot get her out of his head at all. So I guess my questions are, I don't know, did you guys go through that at all where one of you is, you know, trying to talk and the other one is trying to run? And I'm just at my wit's end trying to, you know, figure out how this is ever going to work again.
Lily, you and Eric have something to say here?
Sorry, I think Eric was collecting his thoughts. I'll just start off by saying that, yes, we did deal with that. Both whenever he first told me about it, the affair, before we moved back, and also when he first came back from out of state to start our reconciliation. I think that he still was dealing with the limerence in his head, which is something that's hard to deal with, I imagine. I mean, it's not like you can turn off a light switch. So it's something that they have to work out individually. But also, I think that it was hard for him, for more than one reason, to be able to talk about those things with me when I had questions. Because one, he doesn't want to hurt you, you know, by answering something, especially if he is aware that you're insecure about these things, which is normal. But also, are you?
Okay. I'm just sitting here thinking, and to me, being to that point with Lily, I want to use an analogy here and compare it to praying. If, you know, if of the Christian faith, and I don't know where you stand with that, but, you know, I think everybody knows that people of the Christian faith, we pray to God or to our Savior to ask for forgiveness for all our sins. Well, what if every time we prayed and said, you know, Lord, I've sinned, I did this and this, can you forgive me? You know, God came down in man form and gave us, you know, 15 lashes and told us what awful people we were. And you know, how often would we actually pray? How often would we actually ask for forgiveness? We wouldn't, because we fear the pain of asking for forgiveness more than the sin itself. And it's truly like that with a person who is feeling that shame and feeling just this overwhelming sense of guilt. How can I talk? I didn't trust that Lily could handle what I had to say without completely lashing out at me. And it was easier to contain that within myself and let it eat away at me than to deal with the pain of talking with Lily about it. And that was something that we had to move past. And We went to the marriage 911 workshop. There's a counselor there. His name's Terry. We had you know, a few sessions with him, and that was one of the big things, was how to effectively communicate. And the only thing I can say that you know, that I'm still working on, and I believe I'm going to speak for Lily here and say I believe she's still working on, is 24/7, 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, in a state of forgiveness. And the other spouse has to be able to know and trust and believe that you are ready to forgive them. Otherwise, they're not coming to you. If they fear any kind of retribution, or, you know, as Lily would say, the sideways comments, the passive aggressive responses, it's just easier to say, I don't want to talk.
Okay. Are you guys
forgive.
Okay. So are you guys in the reconciliation process? Are you now living together as well?
Yes. He never left. I left for one night the night that I found out.
Okay.
And the next day he's been home ever since. Yeah.
Right. Okay. And are you having any conversations at all that are having any depth whatsoever?
When we're with the therapist, you know, the thing is, it's so difficult for him. Like, we'll go see the therapist for an hour, and we'll come home, and he'll have to go to bed for the after. It's just so difficult for him to talk.
Right. I understand.
And then, you know, and then I'll say to him, okay, well, we'll talk tomorrow, and then, you know, maybe we'll talk for a while, but it always goes sideways, you know. It's
right.
I
understand.
I just feel like we can't get anywhere.
Well, if I may ask, how old is your husband?
He's 51.
Okay. And so you already found out from the therapist. I'm assuming that she did some of the testing about the avoidant and the attachment styles, those kinds of things. Did she actually test for that, or she just assess it?
Well, I don't know. No, there wasn't actually a test. It was more from an assessment and from looking at his childhood and the emotional neglect that he went through in his childhood.
Yeah, that can actually be tested, believe it or not. It's not difficult to test whatsoever. I hope and pray that you understand that in the healing process he's going through, he probably is going through the grief process. Now, this is going to sound bad, so don't take it bad. Just listen to me if you can. And I know that this is emotionally raw and it's hard to listen, but whenever you lose something that became important to you, for example, you're going through a grief process. You had this marriage that was important to you. He becomes involved with another person. So there's actually a grief process that you go through. But his being involved with this other person and getting to this limerent relationship with this other person, when he stops that, and I don't mean he stops the limerence, I mean he stops the relationship, he stays home, it's like, we're going to work this thing out, then he goes through a grief process as well. And I know that you don't want him to. You want him just to be over that woman, be done with it, work things out with you. But it just doesn't happen like that. Limerence doesn't end immediately. It takes a little while to do. And as it begins to taper off, then the person going through the grief process, he, just like you're going through the grief process, sometimes will withdraw. They'll just pull back and not want to communicate whatsoever at all. It doesn't mean that's necessarily going to be the future. You said this ended like, what did you say, September? Is that when you said?
September. That's right.
Okay. So we're still really relatively new into this. Now I realize that you say, wow, that's 3 or 4 or 5 months. It should be enough, but it's really not. It takes longer than that. And while we would love to be able to give you some magic pill or some magic words to say, and it gets all better in a hurry, it's a process. It's not a pill. It's a process, and it's taking that. We would love to have you at some point come through our workshop, because we specialize in helping people with this. If that's not feasible for you, I'm certainly not trying to push you into it. If you've got a good counselor, certainly stay with your good counselor. But right now, you're still kind of early into it. If you can be a little bit patient with him, which is what I was hearing Eric say, if you can be patient with him at this point, not push too much, and at least you're talking with the therapist, I'll guarantee you that there's a ton of people out there listening right now who would give their right arm if they could just get that far. Okay, we're there in front of the therapist. We're actually talking to each other. And so while it's not what you yet want, it surely sounds like you're on the right path. And if your therapist can help you get there, wonderful. If not, call on people like us that can add into that, not take you from your therapist, but add to that. But right now, I want to encourage you that it sounds to me like you're going in the right direction. I know you're hurting. I know it's painful, and I'm so sorry for that. But it sounds like you're doing the right things and going the right direction. So please, if you can, be patient with him and patient with yourself, and I think you'll get there.
Well, thank you. Thank you so much for that. And I've been, you know, devouring your podcasts and your website and reading and stuff. And I realize, you know, when I hear some people, I realize, you know, are in a much worse situation than I am.
Mm-hmm.
But, and so thank you for that. And I will try to be more patient, but you're exactly right. You know, I'm one of those people that's just like, we need to solve this now, like yesterday, you know,
yeah.
We can't sit around and think about this. We have to, you know, and he's the exact opposite of that. But I will try to be patient. And thank you very much.
Good.
And
you're
thank
very
you,
welcome.
Lily and Eric, as well.
Yeah, Lily and Eric, I do appreciate you guys being on here and talking to these people and sharing your lives like this. I'm really impressed with that. We're going to be running out of time here soon, so let's try to get another caller or two in, and then I want to wrap some things up with you guys, Lily and Eric. Is that okay?
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
Okay. All right, let's go to this next caller here, area code 520. Hello, 520, you're on the Joe Beam Show. Anybody there? Okay, I guess we don't have a caller there, so we'll go ahead and try another 5 area code. This is an area code 570. Hello, area code 570, you're on the Joe Beam Show.
Hello, Joe, can you hear me?
I can hear you, yes. First name, please?
Joshua.
Okay, Joshua, how can we help you tonight?
I actually had a question for Eric and Lily. Kind of like not a two-part question, just a little here. Like, how did you guys begin the process of reconciliation? Like, what did you do to start falling back in love with each other? Like, you know, to get past the anger and the bitterness?
Do you want to take that or do you want me?
Sure, a very tough to answer question. Let me start and say, you know, Lily and I love each other very much, and we went through this bad time, and, you know, that's been I think that was more of a point of contention for Lily during the reconciliation process was, you know, how do we fall back in love? How do we do this? And, man, it's something I don't know that I can verbally express. I can tell you the steps that we've taken. Coming out of the workshop, you know, we opened our communication. We learned the fine art of forgiveness that, like I say, we still work on every single day. Communication and forgiveness, and we have realized again that, you know, the most important part of this marriage to us is outside of the commitment, because we are firmly committed to each other, is that we're best friends and there's no judgment between us, and it allows us to let the relationship develop. I mean, that's, you know, we became friends again. We became people who enjoyed each other's company because we could talk. And we quit trying to push each other's buttons out of spite. And we just worked on loving each other. And, you know, over time, like I say, a lot of bad stuff has to go out and a lot of new good stuff has to come in. But there's days now that, you know, I just look at Lil and I'm like, thank you, God, for what I have sitting beside me, because she's my absolute life. She's my best friend. And there's nothing in this world that can take me away from her.
If I can just insert a little bit here.
It all started with communication and commitment to be good to each other.
Yeah, if I can insert just a little bit here, and Lily may want to address this as well. When we look at it from a social science standpoint and talk about, okay, love, the thing we look at more than anything is what we call acceptance. You can't love anybody you don't accept as they are, even if that person is you. And so if you're going to rebuild love, it means you've got to be able to accept each other. For example, Lily had to accept the fact that Eric had done what he had done. No change can happen to that. We can't go back and undo that. And Eric had to accept the fact that Lily, even though she was very open and upfront at the beginning of the program about some of the things that she had done wrong in their earlier marriage, he had to accept the fact that she's not perfect as well. And when I hear Eric talking about, you know, 24 hours, 7 days a week, we give forgiveness to each other, we love each other, what that really boils down to, if you're going to measure it in some fashion, would be this. Each of us can be who he or she is, and the other person loves that person in spite of his or her flaws. And so when you have a communication process where you can honestly and actually talk to each other, and in that conversations, not be afraid that the other person is going to criticize you, reject you, throw you out. And even if they're hearing things that they don't want to hear about what you think or what you feel or even what you've done, if you can accept another person as he or she is, then that's the essence of what love is. And that's what you guys, Lily and Eric, that's what you have done. And am I correct about that, Lily, or am I missing it?
No, that's absolutely. So I think one of the things that I did struggle with in the very beginning was that, well, I'm never going to have that happy-go-lucky limerent feeling with Eric again. You know, it's gone. But the reality is that sort of chemical high that happens goes away over time anyway. And so I think we kind of graduated from, you know, high school hand-holding and googly eyes into just a much deeper love for one another, because, I kind of transitioned in the way that I looked at him. He wasn't just Eric, my husband. He was Eric, this completely unique individual, and he had, you know, his own history and his own wounds and his own, you know, things, passions. And I stopped looking at him as the picture that I had in my head of who he was. And I started looking at him as who he really was, as a person. Mm-hmm. And I fell in love with him in a different way, because mm-hmm. without me trying to change him and mold him into the Eric that I wanted, I started to really look at him as the Eric that he is and say, hey, I kind of like this guy too.
That's good.
So, and I think that love just kind of came out of that. Of course, I never didn't love him personally. I mean, but my love for him changed through this experience.
Does that help a little bit in the question that you're asking, what they're saying here?
Yes, that was exactly what I was asking.
Exactly. Okay. I'm going to take one more call, and then we're going to kind of wrap up with Eric and Lily here. Anything else you want to ask before we go to the next caller?
No, thank you very much. Thank you.
Okay, thank you. All right, we're going to take this one last call, and then Lily and Eric, we're going to wrap this thing up and talk about some things here. But our last caller I'm going to take tonight is Eric of 218. Hello, 218. You're on the Joe Beam Show.
Hi. My question is kind of... my husband's in limerence and with another woman, and I've been trying to be reassuring to him that I do want to work on things, because I think he has that great fear that I can't forgive him or we never can get past this or whatever. And I want to know, like, is that something that's good to be reassuring about, or on some level is it, like, because he, like, goes through stages where he gets paranoid and he, like, looks through my call history, who I'm talking to, who I'm texting. He's looking for if I've talked to a lawyer, you know, like, he wants to know everything about what I'm doing and where I'm at.
If I don't tell him,
he gets very...
Am I to assume that you guys are still living together? Is that correct? You're still living together?
No, he is not living with me.
Okay, so how is he looking through your phone and that kind of thing?
Because our cell phones are on his plan, and he can look at my call history and text history.
Okay. So is he living with the other woman?
Yes.
All right, so he's living with the other woman, but he's still trying to control what you do by checking out what phone calls you make and those kinds of things,
right? I think
right?
it's like a paranoia about whether
uh-huh.
I'm doing anything to show I wouldn't want to work on things or like...
Well,
is it good to be open and honest and transparent with him and not try to hide anything as far as that goes? Or is it better to just be like, this is my business if you're not interested in working on things?
Right. It's obviously your decision. You have to decide what you're going to do. But in the situation you're talking about, it doesn't sound to me, and I'm not God. I don't have the ability to look in people's minds and hearts and know what they're thinking and feeling. So I am not going to tell you what your husband's thinking or feeling because I don't know. But I'm going to tell you what it sounds like. It doesn't sound like he's wondering as to whether or not you would be willing to take him back. That's not what it sounds like to me. What it sounds like to me is that if he's paranoid at all, it sounds like that paranoia has to do with I'm going to make sure that you're not doing anything that's going to mess up what I'm doing here. For example, like you said, not calling an attorney and et cetera. If I were in your shoes, I would be feeling very controlled, and I would not go along with that. I'd probably go find an attorney, and I know you want to reconcile your marriage, and I'm certainly not trying to convince you to get a divorce. That's not my point here.
I have talked to an attorney, and I've been honest with him about that and stuff, and on some level, I don't know if it benefits me right now to file.
Well, it may not. It may not.
For the things I need right now. And
right. I think it's good that he knows that you would like to reconcile. It's good that he knows that you still love him. But in the situation you're describing, my opinion, and it's just an opinion, I don't know your husband, but my opinion is that what's going on now is not actually to your benefit. It's not making you more attractive, okay? Because what in essence it is that she's out there. I know what she's doing. I've got control. There's nothing for me to worry about. That allows me to keep doing what I'm doing. That's what it sounds like. And if that's the case, then disrupting that in some fashion, saying things to him like you said a minute ago, you know, it's not your business. This is what I need to do, would be to your advantage. Now, again, you have to decide. You have to decide. I can't tell you one way or the other. It's got to be your decision once you do. Okay. I had a little problem with the connection there, so we're gone. Lily and Eric, we're going to wrap this up pretty quickly now. Let me run through some things here. I'm just going to say a bunch of things in a hurry and then get you guys to speak to it, okay? When we talk about reconciliation, we talk about things, and you guys have kind of touched on this, but I'm going to try to summarize it. It requires things like understanding each other's hurt. For example, uh-huh. You talked about that earlier, you know, like not only do I need to understand what Eric went through, he needs to understand what I went through. I need to understand how I hurt him, like he hurt me. So understanding each other's hurt and like that one caller I talked to earlier, sometimes understanding the grief process that goes with that. We don't want the other person to feel grief that they're ending an affair. We don't want that to happen, but both people have a grief process like, you know, Lily, you went through a grief process because you lost the marriage that you had. Eric mm-hmm. probably went through a grief process because he lost that woman that he was involved with, which, as you said earlier in the program, led to him being involved with another woman later, which is not unusual. You guys also talked about that if you're going to reconcile, it has to be about seeking and granting forgiveness, that's extremely important. There's another thing you implied. I don't think you said it directly, but I heard it implied in what you said, and that is that you defend each other. Like, for example, if Lily's family were to come against Eric or Eric's family against Lily, those kinds of things, or friends that say, no, we've taken each other back, and the reconciliation process, we stand together. If you're not going to accept my husband or not going to accept my wife, don't accept me either. And then you do those things to rebuild trust, which means you make mm-hmm. yourself highly accountable, so that the other spouse knows what's going on. Now, you actually can build an accountability level for about a year that you can't live under the rest of your life because it's just too excruciating to be that accountable. But you can do that kind of thing for a while just to rebuild trust so that the other person knows every place you go, all the money you spend, all the things that are involved. And you guys said that you change your communication patterns, that you learn how to talk to each other in a different way. And I think, Lily, you talked about your own insecurities. You did, didn't you? And you had to become aware of that, and he did too. Even to the point, and I don't think you said this, that you can create new rituals. What that means is new things you can do together to start those things that so you can make this new relationship. And I love the way you said that. We didn't rebuild the old relationship. We started a new relationship. So we got about 5 minutes left here. What would you guys like to say? Oh, by the way, let me remind everybody before we do that. Next Tuesday evening is the 1 year anniversary of us doing this particular program. I'm bringing my wife, Alice, on, the woman that I divorced and left for 3 years. And after that, we got back together. We married each other. We reconciled. And just like Lily and Eric have told their stories this evening, Alice and I will tell ours next. It'll be the anniversary, the 1 year anniversary. And tune in at 9 p.m. Central if you'd like to talk to Alice. Now, Eric and Lily, what would you like to say as we wrap this up?
One thing that I've got, you were talking about building trust and stuff like that. I'm going to go as quickly as possible. One thing that was the toughest for me, I won't say the toughest, it was actually pretty easy. I'll tell you why it was tough in a second, is complete openness in terms of my media, my social media, my phone, my computer, all that stuff. For the longest time, I had to completely lock down, really had no access to it. Starting after the workshop and even today, my phone's completely unlocked, Lily knows all my passwords. She has full access to everything and anything that is me anytime she wants it. Just to be open, not too long ago, she checked the phone records. I don't know why she did, but she asked me, she said, "Hey, what's this number?" Well, I don't know. Let me look real quick because I don't ever save numbers, but I showed her, oh, that's, you know, this is one of the managers at work, you know, that's his number. And I showed her my phone where we had texted back and forth. And she can do that. And she used to do it.
Continually.
Quite often. Yeah. Continuously. Yeah. And it got on my nerves at first. And the reason being was because I was like, oh crap, what is she going to find? But now I'm like, you know, if she does it, hey, you know what? She deserves. She has that right, and if she wants to, fine, because I don't have anything to hide. So,
good.
You know, it's a good thing, and but I encourage that you know, there can be no secrets between spouses.
Mm-hmm. Yes, having been the guy that many years ago. Yeah, having been the guy many years ago that left my wife, I understand exactly what you're saying. It's a deep, peaceful feeling when you don't have to hide. Isn't that right? I mean, you know that, my brother. Is that not true? Yes, absolutely.
Yes.
So, Lily, what would you say as we wrap up here?
Well, like I said at the beginning, I guess one of the biggest things that I had to come to accept in actually kind of a couple of different ways is not to have expectations for things. And I know that sounds weird, but what I mean by that is don't have this image in your head of what you think your spouse is going to be like or what your life should look like or what reconciliation needs to be like. Because I think that whenever you set yourself up with all these expectations, you're going to get failed in some way. And it's not anybody's fault. But when you go into things with an expectation of what you think it's going to look like and it doesn't end up looking like that for whatever reason, then you end up disappointed. And I think that if you just kind of go into it like, you know, come what may, this is what I'm going to stick with and I'm going to follow through with this, you kind of start to learn to accept things for what they are instead of what you expect mm-hmm. them to be like.
Mm-hmm. Excellent. Very good. Hey, I really appreciate you guys coming on and sharing your story and talking to these people. And thank you so very much. I'm glad for all of the things you guys do. You really care about people. It comes across in so many different ways. I think extremely highly of you. And so thank you for being on the program tonight. I'm about 1 minute left on the program, and so I'm going to wrap this up here. And thank you, Lily. Thank you, Eric. Thank you, all of you that tune in and watch and call in and ask questions. Sorry for all those people we didn't get to actually talk to tonight. But I hope that you come back next week and talk to Alice, my wife of, well, 15 years the first time, 29 years this time. So it's hard to say how long we've been married, but my wife, and listen to the conversations that we have. Eric, thank you so much. Lily, thank you so much. You guys have a good night. And to all the listeners, Okay, thank you so much. All right, God bless everyone. Take care.